Chapter 25. The antique Ford trimotor aircraft, famed in aviation history as the Tin Goose, looked too awkward to fly. And yet she banked as gracefully and majestically as an albatross when she lined up for her final approach to the runway of the Washington National Airport. Pitt eased back the three throttles, and the old bird touched down with all the delicacy of an autumn leaf kissing high grass. He taxied over to one of the Numa hangars at the north end of the airport, where his waiting maintenance crew chocked the wheels and made the routine throat-cutting sign. Flipping off the ignition switches, he watched the silver-bladed propellers gradually slow their revolutions and come to rest, gleaming in the late afternoon sun. Then he removed the headphones, draped them on the control column, undid the latch on his side window, and pushed it open. A bewildered frown slowly creased Pitt's forehead and hung there in the tanned, leathery skin. A man was standing on the asphalt below, frantically waving his hands. "May I come aboard?" Gene Seagram shouted. "I'll come down," Pitt yelled back. "No, please stay where you are." Pitt shrugged and leaned back in his seat. It took Seagram only a few seconds to climb aboard the trimotor and push open the cockpit door. He wore a stylish tan suit with vest, but his well-tailored appearance was diluted by a sea of wrinkles that creased the material, making it obvious that he hadn't seen a bed for at least 24 hours. "Where did you ever find such a gorgeous old machine?" Seagram asked. "I ran across it at Keflavik, Iceland," Pitt replied. "Managed to buy it at a fair price and have it shipped back to the States. She's a beauty." Pitt motioned Seagram to the empty co-pilot seat. "You sure you want to talk in here? In a few minutes the sun will make this cabin feel like the inside of an incinerator." "What I have to say won't take long." Seagram eased into the seat and let out a long sigh. Pitt studied him. He looked like a man who was unwilling and trapped, a proud man who had placed himself in an uncompromising position. Seagram did not face Pitt when he spoke, but stared nervously through the windshield. "I suppose you're wondering what I'm doing here," he said. "The thought crossed my mind. I need your help." That was it. No mention of the harsh words from the past, no preliminaries, only a straight-to-the-gut request. Pitt's eyes narrowed. "For some strange reason, I had the feeling that my company was about as welcome to you as a dose of syphilis." "Your feelings, my feelings, they don't matter. What does matter is that your talents are in desperate demand by our government." "Talents? Desperate demand?" Pitt did not disguise his surprise. "You're putting me on, Seagram." "Believe me, I wish I was. But Admiral Sandecker assures me that you're the only man who stands a remote chance of pulling off a ticklish job." "What job?" "Salvaging the Titanic." "Of course. Nothing like a salvage operation to break the monotony of—" Pitt broke off in mid-sentence. His deep green eyes widened and the blood rose to his face. "What ship did you say?" His voice came in a hoarse murmur this time. Seagram looked at him with an amused expression. "The Titanic. Surely you've heard of it." Perhaps 10 seconds ticked by in utter silence, while Pitt sat there stunned. Then he said, "Do you know what you're proposing?" "Absolutely." "It can't be done." Pitt's expression was incredulous, his voice still in the same hoarse murmur. "Even if it were technically possible, and it isn't, it'd take hundreds of millions of dollars. And then there's the unending legal entanglement with the original owners and the insurance companies over salvage rights." "There are over 200 engineers and scientists working on the technical problems at this moment," Seagram explained. "Financing will be arranged through secret government funding. And as far as legal rights go, forget it. Under international law, once a vessel is lost with no hope of recovery, it becomes fair game for anybody who wishes to spend the money and effort on a salvage operation." He turned and stared out the windshield again. You can't know, Pitt, how important this undertaking is. The Titanic represents much more than treasure or historic value. There is something deep within its cargo holds that is vital to the security of our nation. You'll forgive me if I say that sounds a bit far-fetched. Perhaps. But underneath the flag-waving, the facts hold true. Pitt shook his head. You're talking sheer fantasy. The Titanic lies in nearly 2.5 miles of water. The pressure at those depths runs several thousand pounds to the square inch, Mr. Seagram. Not square foot or square yard, but square inch. The difficulties and barriers are staggering. No one has ever seriously attempted to raise the Andrea Doria or the Lusitania from the bottom, and they both lie only 300 feet from the surface. If we can put men on the moon, we can bring the Titanic up to the sunlight again, Seagram argued. There's no comparison. It took a decade to set a 4-ton capsule on lunar soil. Lifting 45,000 tons of steel is a different proposition. It may take months just to find her. The search is already underway. I heard nothing about a search effort, Seagram finished. Not likely that you should. Until the operation becomes unwieldy in terms of security, it will remain secret. Even your assistant special projects director, Albert Giordano. Giordino. Yes, Giordino, thank you. He is at this very moment piloting a search probe across the Atlantic sea floor in total ignorance of his true mission. But the Lorelei current expedition? The Sappho-1's original mission was to trace a deep ocean current. A timely coincidence. Admiral Sandecker was able to order the submersible into the area of the Titanic's last known position barely hours before the sub was scheduled to surface. Pitt turned and stared at a jet airliner that was lifting from the airport's main runway. Why me? What have I done to deserve an invitation to what has to be the biggest harebrained scheme of the century? You are not simply to be a guest, my dear Pitt. You are to command the overall salvage operations. Pitt regarded Seagram grimly. The question still stands. Why me? Not a selection that excites me, I assure you, Seagram said. However, since the National Underwater and Marine Agency is the nation's largest acknowledged authority on oceanographic science, and since the leading experts on deep water salvage are members of their staff, and since you are the agency's special projects director, you were elected. The fog begins to lift. It's a simple case of my being in the wrong occupation at the wrong time. Read it as you will, Seagram said wearily. I must admit, I found your past record of bringing incredibly difficult projects to successful conclusions most impressive. He pulled out a handkerchief and dabbed his forehead. Another factor that weighed heavily in your favor, I might add, is that you are considered somewhat of an expert on the Titanic. Collecting and studying Titanic memorabilia is a hobby with me, nothing more. It hardly qualifies me to oversee your salvage. Nonetheless, Mr. Pitt, Admiral Sandecker tells me you are, to use his words, a genius at handling men and coordinating logistics. He gazed over at Pitt, his eyes uncertain. Will you take the job? You don't think I can pull it off, do you, Seagram? Frankly, no. But when one dangles over the cliff by a thread, one has little say about who comes to the rescue. A faint smile edged Pitt's lips. Your faith in me is touching. Well? Pitt sat lost in thought for several moments. Finally, he gave an almost imperceptible nod and looked squarely into Seagram's eyes. Okay, my friend, I'm your boy. But don't count your chickens until that rusty old hulk is moored to a New York dock. There isn't a betmaker in Las Vegas who'd waste a second computing odds on this crazy escapade. When we find the Titanic, if we find the Titanic, her hull may be too far gone to raise. But then, nothing's absolutely impossible. And, though I can't begin to guess what it is that's so valuable to the government that warrants the effort, I'll try, Seagram. Beyond that, I promise nothing. Pitt broke into a wide grin and climbed from the pilot's seat. End of speech. Now then, let's get out of this hot box and find a nice, cool, air-conditioned cocktail lounge where you can buy me a drink. It's the least you can do after pulling off the con job of the year. Seagram just sat there, too drained to do anything except shrug in helpless acquiescence.